Mental illness is epidemic in America, and the problem is spreading worldwide. It's time for decisive action, because the battle for the mind is part of a much larger war being waged between good and evil, with you as the prize. Welcome to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings. For the next hour, we'll uncover Bible-based weapons for fighting destructive feelings and resolving inner conflicts. Dr. Jennings wants to arm you with the tools necessary for achieving emotional and mental stability as you strengthen your relationship with God. We'll open the phone lines for your questions in just a moment. I'm your Simple Solutions host, Charles Mills.
Today we talk about sex. That's right, sex. You know what it is, don't you? Well, maybe not. Sex is one of those objects, one of those subjects that embarrasses most people who talk about it. Sort of like discussing how much you paid for your last car. You want to have negotiated a good deal, but you're not sure if you actually did. Pastors and Christian counselors tell us that God invented sex. Well, exactly which sex did God invent? There are a lot of variations out there. What exactly did God have in mind when he told Adam and Eve to be fruitful and multiply? Here to help us find the true purpose and beauty in this most common of human endeavors is Dr. Timothy Jennings. Dr. Jennings, we need your help. What, in your mind, did God have in mind when he invented sex?
I think God's purpose was love and the joining of two people, separate individualities, separate identities, separate personhoods, who can come together in the experience of other-centered giving and love, sharing of themselves, literally in this case, to bring forth new life in their image. He created them with this capacity because they were created. Let us make man in our image, male and female. Notice that, male and female. It takes both to fulfill the image of God. So I think he designed mankind in this way so that as finite beings with physical boundaries to our personhood, we could join together with physically in a way of love that would share ourselves literally with each other and bring forth new life in our own image. I think it was all part of God's way of sharing creative power with his creatures and tying together how pleasurable it is to actually love another more than yourself as God originally designed.
Now, you kept saying bring about new life. What about the couple that has four kids and they're going, I don't think so, not again, but they want to have sex without having a child? Is this stepping outside of God's purpose for sex?
Okay, well, first, I think that's a great question. We need to answer it, but that question is actually different than what you asked to start, because you asked what was God's original design, and that was in a world without sin. Now you're talking about we live in a world of sin, a world where we don't have perfect environment, perfect health, perfect food sources, never have to want for clothing, never have to get cold, never have to worry about a child getting sick and starving to death. We don't live in a world of total perfection where those things no longer are an issue. We don't live in a world in which a woman never has to worry about having pain in childbirth or having any complications of delivery. We live in a world that has been marred by sin. And so what, as everything that God created has been infected, so too has sex and sexuality been affected by the ravages of sin on God's creation. But I was answering your question of what God's original purpose was in Eden in creating us in this way.
Well, now, if you say God's original purpose, like he said to Adam, be fruitful and multiply, and here's a fun way of doing it, now we're dealing with the fun and not the being fruitful and multiplying. Are we allowing sin to alter God's purpose in our lives, and that's okay?
Actually, he didn't say here's a fun way to do it. He said, be fruitful and multiply, and you will experience the joy of what it is like to give of yourself in love with another. The joining together is as close as God could create finite beings to experience the infinite joy that the Godhead has amongst themselves when they give of themselves to create new creatures in their image. And so this was part of the design lesson of mankind being made in the image of God. And so the joy comes in that wonderful experience as God's design.
Dr. Jennings, we have to say that Adam and Eve must have enjoyed being fruitful and multiplying, because everything God made was for man's enjoyment. I mean, before sin, there was nothing but enjoyment and eating and walking and having fruitfulness. So we have to say that the enjoyment was there.
There's no question.
But it wasn't separated from the end result.
That's right. It was God's design for it to be that way. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So now we're a long way from there. We're 6,000 years from that. And a lot of people are saying, you know, we want the enjoyment without having the children. Is this okay in your mind?
I think that God, when God created us in his image, he gave us abilities and capacities. One of those abilities that he endowed us with was with the ability to procreate or create beings in our image. He expects us to govern those abilities as he governs his abilities. And he doesn't wantonly, whimsically use his abilities to create, and he doesn't expect us, those in his image, to use our abilities wantonly and whimsically. And so therefore, he would expect us to use our good intelligence, our reasoning powers, the judgment he has given us to decide where and with whom we procreate. And when we do, within the context of a blessed relationship of God, decide to have sexual relations, when we decide to bring children into the world, that is part of being made in God's image to determine when and how and whether we should or should not do those things. So yes, it is appropriate in this world for a couple to decide whether they want to have a child or not have a child, and then make intelligent decisions to govern those capacities that God gave them for the ultimate outcome that they're desiring.
We're walking around and around this thing, Dr. Jennings. Is it okay in your estimation, in your research, and what you know about this subject, is it okay for a couple to have sex and enjoy it without the idea of procreating?
Of course. That's the whole point. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. If they've made the decision in their good judgment that at their station in life and where they are in time, that it is not in their best interest for them to be pursuing children at this point in their life, then it is absolutely their God-given responsibility to take measures to prevent a pregnancy.
Okay. All right. Okay. Now I see where we're going with this thing. Okay. Got it. I want to open the phone lines right away on this thing because there may be people with questions on this subject. I know that a lot of patients come to you, at least I've read in your books and here in the conversation and in your blogs, that there are issues that people are facing on this. I want to make sure that our listeners have ample opportunity to ask the question to you. And because of this subject, listener, you don't have to give your name. If you would just rather just come on the air and we'll call you whatever you want us to call you. Or if you'd like, you can give your question directly to the call answerer, and she'll put it up on the screen, and I'll read it out loud, and Dr. Jennings will answer it. Here's the number, 800-775-4673, 800-775-4673. And the reason I ask that question, Dr. Jennings, there are people who believe that procreation, having a child, is the only reason to have sex. And I wanted to make sure that we had a little better understanding of this subject, so I hope you don't mind.
No, I know that people think that. There, as with many subjects and issues, there are a lot of distortions and misunderstandings about this subject matter. So yeah, some people believe that, but that they would have a hard time being able to demonstrate that from any inspired source.
And I think that we can clear it up rather rapidly that God's purpose was and is that this procreation, this being fruitful and multiplying, is supposed to take place between a man and a woman within the marriage institution. Am I correct?
That was his original design, and it was his original design that it should take place in a world without sin.
Yes. Okay, 800-775-4673. We have a break coming up here. We have a lot of talk about on this subject, sex. If you have a question, we'd like to hear from you. Here's the number once again, 800-775-4673. And from our callers today, we are going to draw a name for the book, Could It Be This Simple? A Biblical Model for Healing the Mind by Dr. Jennings. And this book right here I have in my hand, you can't have my copy. It's all marked up. You wouldn't want it anyway because it's all just pages are brown and turned, but you can get a brand new copy. We'll make sure that you get one if you win the drawing today at 800-775-4673. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Here's your daily heartbeat with Dr. James Markham. One of the neat things about the Bible is it gives you millions, well, tons of ways to change your body's chemistry. Did you know that the Bible is filled with wonderful ways that we can change our chemistry? Now, would you rather take a prescription medication or do something from the Bible to help you feel better? I would choose to follow the owner's manual. This is the way we can best get our chemistry the way God intended. If you jumped off a building, things would break. Likewise, if we don't follow the laws God's given us, our chemistry changes. We're not following the owner's manual. When this happens day in and day out, we become diseased and sick. So in Heartbeat, I want us to follow the biblical prescriptions to change our chemistry.
Thank you, Dr. Markham. If you'd like more information, go to heartwiseministries.org. That's heartwiseministries.org.
Can you put a price tag on confidence? Hello, this is Jeremy Woodruff, and my oldest daughter, Elizabeth, had a little bit of a struggle learning to ride a bicycle. She had a hand-me-down bike with a mismatched set of training wheels that would come loose, making for quite an unsteady ride. I knew she was close to not needing the training wheels at all, but she just couldn't seem to proceed without them until she could ride confidently with them. So I made a $12 investment in some new training wheels, and it wasn't but a matter of days before they weren't even needed anymore. And you know, seeing Ellie take off with a smile on her face was worth far more than $12. I'm reminded of a heavenly father who was willing to make the ultimate investment to see his children thrive. To learn more about this God of love, call this toll-free number, 800-775-4673, and ask for the free Discover Bible Study lessons. Give your spiritual self-confidence a big boost. Call 800-775-HOPE and ask for Discover.
Welcome back to Simple Solutions. I'm your host, Charles Mills. We're here with Dr. Timothy Jennings, Christian psychiatrist and author, and today we're talking about sex. And Dr. Jennings has made it very clear at the very, very beginning of the show that sex was something that God had in mind, and the idea of it in a perfect world was to provide the way of being creative, such as he is, and that we can enjoy that that process. Well, we're a long ways from that perfect world. We're in a world where people get sick and where pregnancy and childbirth is painful. And well, this is kind of off the subject, but, you know, if we make childbirth painful, we can make it unpainful. If we make it unpainful, are we still okay, Dr. Jennings, in your estimation of God's plan? If we give a shot in the backbone and out comes the baby and everybody's smiling, is this still okay?
Sure. Absolutely. Okay. As far as we can go to move ourselves back towards God's original design, that would be the healthy thing to do. We want to move ourselves closer and closer to the Edenic ideal. So, yes.
All right. There are some people who believe that we need to feel all the pain to fulfill God's judgment on us. Okay, good. 800-775-4673 is our phone number for your questions. We'll have a drawing for Could It Be This Simple, Dr. Jennings' book, at the end of the show.
See, that question, that statement, that if fulfill God's judgment on us, is such a read into. See, why do people feel pain in childbirth? Is it because God inflicts the pain? Or is it because, having stepped outside God's original ideal, man and woman have been changed, and now the physiology that does not function in the perfect way God originally designed it, and there are consequences of that, one of which is pain in childbirth?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, let's move into a little bit more deeper in the subject of sex. I want to know from a psychological standpoint what happens in the brain during intercourse, Dr. Jennings. It is a powerful, powerful thing that probably has purposes, and we'd like to know from you what are some of the purposes that God placed in our brains for the sex act.
Well, this is one of the reasons why it is so important to maintain one's fidelity and loyalty until marriage, and then with your marriage partner. There's a hormone that is produced in the brain called oxytocin. This particular hormone has been shown and demonstrated to be involved in that sense of connectedness, bonding, emotional attachment, a unity, love. This hormone is involved in all of that. Now, this particular hormone is increased in close relationships. The brain will release more of it when we are in a close contact with someone that we love and trust. There is more of it released during touching of the skin and sensitive areas of the body in a relation with somebody we love and trust. And then during orgasm, the brain releases even more of this. And so there's this actually a physiological change in a brain that happens based on this releasing of this hormone where you become bonded to the person that you are sexually involved with. And as this is going on, you can become conditioned such that when you see the person or think about the person you're sexually involved in or see a picture of them, that you will get a surge of oxytocin, which will increase that connectedness and that closeness to the person you're involved with. And so what happens is that in a relationship that's been built on love and trust, that through the context of the building of the relationships before sex itself, the brain is releasing oxytocin, which is building a sense of closeness, a sense of intimacy, a sense of connectedness. This sense of intimacy actually, and by the way, oxytocin also causes a woman especially to experience more powerful orgasm than without the oxytocin. So this means that a woman in a committed relationship, a marital relationship in which there is true love and trust being experienced over the course of time, not only has a closer relationship, feels more connected, more bonded, but actually has better sex than women who sleep around.
Now, is it possible to use this up? I mean, if you have sex with multiple partners, you're not married to them, the brain is firing this stuff out, and et cetera, et cetera. Does this stuff go away eventually?
No, you don't use up your oxytocin. What happens is it causes you to have impairments in your ability to bond. Because you're using the oxytocin to bond here and to bond there, and pretty soon you become in somewhat callous and in your ability to be connected. So your connections become fragmented.
So if someone is very promiscuous, they may find in time that they begin to not be able to create that close connection that they had at the beginning with partner number 7, 8, 9.
Well, I think there's truth in that, but we wouldn't want somebody to be discouraged because the reality is the brain can rewire itself and can heal. And so what would need to happen is there would need to be a period of a sabbatical from such activity, allowing things to reset and then move forward in a healthy love relationship as God designed it to build in healthy ways. A simple example would be, imagine you've been out working all morning in your yard and it's breakfast is 4 hours ago and you're really hungry and you come in and you got some fresh, ripe strawberries and you bite into one. How is that?
Tastes delicious.
That's wonderful. Yes.
Yeah.
How about you have just eaten a Snickers bar and then bite into the same strawberry? Now what?
Yeah. Right. Not quite so delicious.
No, it's actually even maybe even tart, and it's not enjoyable.
Yeah.
But what happens if after the Snickers bar you wait 3 or 4 hours and then eat that strawberry?
It's delicious again.
Okay. This is kind of an example of what happens when we have stepped outside the God's design for sex in the context of a marriage. There can be moments of an intense overstimulation of the neural circuits that God has given us, and so we get this intense physical pleasure. But at the same time, it actually blunts our ability to enjoy the richness of what God has designed for us in His plan. And there needs to be a sabbatical, a period of pause to allow things to reset and then move forward as God designed, and we can enjoy that richness and sweetness as God designed it.
Now, I'm sure that there's a listener or two who are saying, okay, how long should that pause be? Are we talking a month, a year, 4 days? What are we talking about here?
It depends on the person and their history and their experience and what they've gone through and how fragmented and how injured and how many other issues associated with relational dynamics they have to work through.
I guess the message here is to stop eating the Snickers bars right there and just hold out for that delicious strawberry down the road. 800-775-4673 with your questions. I don't think people are wanting to ask questions. They want to hear what we're saying here. But we'd like to hear from you, listener, to make sure we're on the right track. And I represent you, listener. That's what I'm here for. But I may not ask the question that you want to ask. I want to make sure that you have ample opportunity to get your thoughts into this program. So that's why we have the phone lines open at 800-775-4673. You don't have to come on the air. You can just leave your question with our call answerer, and we'll read it on the air and see what Dr. Jenick has to say.
I want to follow up, make another point about this oxytocin and this bonding. When we have relations outside the marriage relationship, a teenage girl, college guy, they're involved sexually with somebody that they've had intense emotions with, but maybe that person isn't really well suited. Maybe they are not qualified. Maybe they've got aspects of their personality or their character that really would make them ill-suited to be a marriage partner. Once you engage in sexual relations with that person, you have physiologically altered your ability to end the relationship. It makes it much harder to break off a relationship because you have biochemically made a biochemical bond with this person, and you're much more likely to stay engaged in this relationship and even see it through to marriage, even though this marriage may be destructive to you in the long run, and even though some part of you is aware that this person is not qualified and you really may not want to be in this relationship, it's much more difficult to extricate yourself from it once you've been sexually active because of this hormonal response.
This is probably why I've noticed in my life, as I know people throughout my life, that former lovers have a hard time being friends, but former friends have no problem being friends. In other words, if there was intimacy in a relationship, those two people have a hard time later on being friends with each other. It's probably because of this, what you're saying.
There's no question. There would be this residual bond there. Now, if enough time goes by and there's a real healthy conversion experience and a real healthy bond with someone else, that may not always be true. But I would say in the vast majority of cases that there remains a vulnerability there that you would want to be careful about. Unless, of course, we all know if the relationship has become so toxic that the whole experience has become poisoned and the feelings of hate and animosity and disgust have become so strong that, you know, in the case of husbands, wives who divorce and they hate the other person so badly they never want to see them again, those types of negative emotions have become so strong they can outweigh the bonding type thing.
All right.
But that's not healthy either.
Yeah. Well, we have a break coming up here in just a couple of minutes, and I don't want to start a large discussion at this point. We have calls coming in and questions coming in for you, Doctor. I want to make sure that we give everybody ample opportunity to get their questions in. So right now is a good opportunity for you to call, folks, 800-775-4673, and get your question in as we go over through the break. So on the other side of the break, we'll have your questions ready to give to Dr. Jennings on this subject. And, you know, do we as Christians – are we any clearer on this than our non-Christian brethren? Have you found in the people that come to see you, Dr. Jennings, that we Christians have it a little bit more together than everybody else as we worship God and sing to Him and pray to Him?
I'm not sure on this. What do you mean by this? On relationships, on marriage,
on sex? On the whole question of sex, yeah.
No, I don't think so. I think that I think Christians generally have as a belief, whether they practice it or not, that we should maintain ourselves in purity until marriage, that non-Christians don't. That belief alone is a healthy belief to have, and if that belief is carried out, then that gives an advantage to have a healthier relationship with your marriage partner and will protect one from both emotional and potentially physical consequences of leading a promiscuous life. But my experience is that even though most Christians would claim that belief, there's a vast majority that don't actually practice that belief.
All right. Well, our break is coming up here, and when we come back, I want to address the subject that a lot of people have expressed that I've seen and heard. They say, you know, the magic is gone. I've been married to this woman now for 20, 30,
well, wait,
40.
I got to interrupt and clarify something I just said. I got to clarify.
Okay.
And that is, when I said vast majority, I meant the vast majority of patients that I'm seeing. I'm not talking about the vast majority of Christians in the country. I don't know about that.
Very good. Okay. What happens when the passion is gone? Is Viagra a gift from God? 800-775-4673. 800-775-4673. Stay right where you are.
Hi, this is Bob Lapine, the author of the book, The Christian Husband. If a husband wants to be a world-class lover, to love his wife as Christ loves the church, he needs to look at God's definition of love, found in 1 Corinthians 13, beginning at verse 4. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. If it's your goal to love your wife well as a husband, it wouldn't hurt you to memorize God's definition of what real love looks like.
Bible for Life is brought to you by the English Standard Version. Visit us at BibleForLife.org.
His first pictures were supposed to be in his mother's arms. His first months were supposed to be at home. His first years weren't supposed to be such a worry. It's no one's fault. We did everything right. But still, our son was born 3 months premature, and no one knows why.
More than 460,000 babies are born premature each year, before 37 weeks of pregnancy. That's 1 in 8 of all births. Nearly half the time, there is no known cause. Many are born so soon and so small, they face serious lifelong health problems. Others don't survive the first year. Please support March of Dimes research so we can learn more about the causes of premature birth and how to prevent it. Visit marchofdimes.com or call 1-888-966-3222.
I just wish someone could tell me why.
Premature birth. The answers can't come soon enough.
Jesus said in John 14:27, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid." Do you long for that peace in your life? Let's return to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings.
There was a time when I would say at the beginning of this discussion that the young people in the house need to go to a different room, but I kind of feel that they know more about this than we do. 800-775-4673. We're talking about sex with Dr. Timothy Jennings. Our phone lines are open for your questions, and here's a question from Oregon. The caller wanted to know, and I'm quoting, "For people who are bipolar," now bipolar means they have these mood swings from euphoria to depression, "they have manic stages in which their sexual act becomes high and sex becomes crazy. How does this fit into God's plan?" Dr. Jennings?
You know, this question is just loaded with so many good things. I'm really glad this question came in. And we're going to talk about bipolar in a second and what happens in the brain. But first, this idea of how does it fit with God's plan. The reality is, it was never part of God's plan for people to have bipolar disorder. It was never part of God's plan for children to be born with spinal bifida and congenital heart defects. It was never part of God's plan for His children on earth to have sin in their lives. And it says in Psalms 51, we are born in sin, conceived in iniquity. The root to many of my patients that come to see me have questions and struggles like this is because they have a belief in their mind that goes something like this: why did God create me with bipolar disorder? Why did God want my child to have autism? Why did God create my child with a Down syndrome? Well, the truth is, He didn't. That is a distortion, a lie, a falsehood. God created, according to Scripture, Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, and they were perfect, without any flaw, blemish, or defect. And God gave Adam and Eve an ability that we're talking about today to create beings in their image. And when they changed themselves from perfection to imperfection, then they began to have children in their image, and their image was no longer perfect because they contaminated their image. And now we have all these diseases and defects coming into the human gene pool and into our experience, bipolar illness being one of those defects, deviations from God's original design. And what happens in the brain of somebody with bipolar disorder in a manic stage, there's a part of the brain called the orbital frontal cortex. It's the part of the brain right behind your forehead and right above the eye socket. That part of your brain gives us the sense of what's socially appropriate and redirects our behaviors toward more appropriate behaviors, a conviction of wrongdoing. It's involved in what we might call our conscience. When people are in a manic stage, that part of the brain is turned off. It's hypoactive. It's not working. And therefore, they don't have any self-restraint or good judgment or reason. And so they can act out on impulses they would otherwise never think to act out upon. They would be offended. And many of my patients with bipolar disorder who have done these things in manic episodes, when they're not in a manic episode and this part of the brain is turned back on, they feel guilt. They're disgusted with themselves. Why did I do such a thing? Well, because you have an illness that, when not treated, causes your brain to become imbalanced, and you actually don't have the part of the brain turned on you need to restrain or govern yourself from acting out in these ways. It was never part of God's plan to have his children with brains that didn't work the way he originally designed them in Eden. This is a consequence of the fact that sin is damaging his creation on earth. And we really need to root this out of people's minds, because so many of my patients struggle with this idea that it's God's will that they have this illness or their children have this illness. It is absolutely not. It is his will that he heal us and restore us. And if you look at his will in Scripture, he is coming back to free us from the ravages of what sin is doing to us, that we will one day have glorified bodies and be free from all of this. That is his will.
But isn't it naive for people to say God's plan, God's original plan, is still in process? That would be called plan A. Isn't God in around like B or plan B or plan C by now that includes sin, or that makes accommodation for sin?
God's plan has always been for perfection for his children. His plan has been attacked, and it says Christ himself said, when he gave the parable of the sower and the tares came up in the field, who did this? An enemy has done this. It was never the sower's plan to have weeds in his field. An enemy put them there. It was never God's plan for his children to have pain, to have suffering, to have sickness, to have death. It was never his plan. It is, and as soon as the enemy sowed the seeds of sin into God's creation, God went into action to eliminate the seeds of pain, the seeds of suffering, the seeds of death. And we're looking towards the fulfillment of his plan when all is brought back into unity under one head, even Jesus Christ again, and this world will be free from all the taint of sin and death and disease. That will be the fulfillment of God's plan. So this is not plan B. This is still plan A, but plan A has been attacked by an enemy, and God is working to eradicate all the influence of the enemy from his plan.
Well, I am so glad that God is not wishy-washy, that God does not go to the second and third and fourth plan. I'm glad that God has an original plan, and it still sticks, and it will be there forever. I like that about God. 800-775-4673 for your question or comment on today's subject, the purpose of passion. What sex did God invent? We're talking about physical intimacy today, and we'd like to hear from you. And from our callers, we will take a name, and we will give that person a copy of Could It Be This Simple? It's Dr. Jennings' wonderful biblical model for the healing of the mind. Okay, I asked a question just prior to the break, and I want to hear what your response is. I said that a lot of people are saying, the passion has gone from our relationship, from our marriage. It's been 15, 20, 30 years now, or 4 weeks, whatever the case may be. And they're saying, I just don't feel passion anymore, Dr. Jennings, and I can't get turned on, so I'm going to go get those little pills, and I'm going to take these down. Is Viagra a gift from God or a distortion in God's plan?
The way you phrased the question, the way you described it, you've kind of made it a difficult question to answer. If you had just answered the question, is Viagra part of God's plan? Well, it can be, in the sense that God is working to reverse all the damages that sin has caused his creation. And if somebody has a physical condition that impairs the normal physiologic function of their body, and so then because of that physiological dysfunction, and we're going to talk about the dysfunction of their eyeballs. And so they go get glasses for their eyes so their eyes can function well and they can see and get back closer to the way God designed things to function. Would we call that part of his plan that we get glasses? If somebody has a hard time hearing and they get a hearing aid to assist with that, is that part of his plan? And so if somebody has other physiological problems and they go to get those problems fixed from some medical intervention, then we would call that part of his plan to try to reverse or hold back or to minimize the impact of disease, suffering, and death on his creation. So yes, we'd call that part of his plan. The way you framed the question, though, was about libido, which was drive or desire, not actual physiological functioning. And libido, the most, and maybe your audience doesn't know this, but the most important sexual organ that you have is your brain. That is the most important sexual organ that you have. It's your brain. And it's about, and you think this through as you have had intimate relationships, the arousal, the giving of oneself, all those things. These are actions happening in the brain. And so some people who may not have a desire, the Viagra, more than having the physiological effects on the end organs, can have a psychological effect of causing a novelty, an interest to be piqued, something special to be happening in their mind that they didn't have happening without the substance. And so it may be causing a psychological interest that wasn't there before they took the Viagra. And for that reason, it can also pique libido for those reasons as well. I would suggest that if this is just related to now, libido can also be affected by many other things. Maybe as we age, we lose the normal sexual hormones that we have, and that needs to be evaluated and replaced if appropriate. But if libido can be affected also because of unhealthy relationship issues. And if this relationship has lost, as you described, love in the relationship, I would suggest that Viagra is not going to fix that and could actually be a mechanism whereby we avoid dealing with problems in the relationship that need to be addressed.
Okay, very good. 800-775-4673. Here's a caller that asked this question. Let me see if I can get this straight. This is kind of complicated. A caller was getting ready to marry his girlfriend of over 4 years. Okay, after college, she hooked up with another man who dropped her a month later. The ex-girlfriend wanted to get back with him a month later. The relationship was a short fling, but now because of the breakup, they both love each other and want to get back together. Is this an example of the sabbatical? You were talking about getting apart from each other, then coming back together again.
No. That okay. Was not a sabbatical. Okay, because now maybe for the guy, he took a sabbatical potentially, but he didn't actually disengage his mind and his imagination. I suspect the entire time he was ruminating about his girlfriend, wondering where she was, fantasizing about her, thinking about how he could get her back. And so he didn't allow his neural tracks to unwind and take a break. And the girl herself, while she was away from him, she was involved with another guy. And while she's involved with another guy, she's still exercising those emotional, relational tracks that are involved in bonding and so forth. So no, this was not an example of a sabbatical. Sabbatical is when we're not involved with anyone in a romantic way, and we have no love interest in our mind that we are focused or ruminating upon. So no, this would not be a sabbatical.
All right, very good. 800-775-4673. The idea of losing your passion over years as you age, is this, I'm sure that it wasn't part of God's original plan that Adam and Eve were supposed to love each other and be fruitful, multiply probably indefinitely, I would think, with why they were not going to die, they didn't get old. But in this world of sin, God's original plan is for us not to lose it, but we lose it because of sin. Is this something we should fight, or is this something that we should feel embarrassed about? In other words, if a couple are not physically intimate with each other after they've been married for 30, 40, 50, 60 years, should they be embarrassed by this? Do they think this is something wrong, or just accept it as part of living in this world?
That question is so broad, and there's so many reasons why that physical intimacy is lost over time. Sometimes that it is just a normal process of aging, that the physical body is no longer able to carry through with some of those things because of illness and disease and so forth, and there should be no embarrassment. I mean, we can think of the extreme examples that we all can look at and know. When Christopher Reeves had his accident with playing polo and he was paralyzed from the neck down, he significantly could no longer engage in some of the activities with his wife that he used to engage with. Should he feel embarrassed about that or no? Well, that's an obvious example of the physical body being damaged, but age can also damage the body over the course of time, and sometimes for these reasons, physical illness impair it. No. And just because we lose that type of intimacy doesn't mean we lose love or connectedness or bonding or closeness with each other. And we can still engage in hand-holding, snuggling, affection of lots of different kinds that keep the love love alive in our hearts for our partner that can supersede physical sex. And the genuine love that God designed is not simply about sex. Sex would be one expression of that love that happens as the culmination of that love. But there are many people who have sex that have no love in their relationships at all.
Yes.
And it is about love in the heart for the other person that grows stronger and stronger and stronger with time. Even if there's not, the body's not capable of having physical sex anymore, the love of the heart for each other can still grow stronger all the way until the day we die on this earth.
That is why I like talking with you each week, Dr. Jennings. You have a very, very positive message for every one of us. 800-775-4673 is our phone number. If you'd like to leave your question, you can come on the air if you want, or you can just have it typed in by our phone screener, and we'll read it on the air as we have. And you'll be in the drawing for the copy of Could It Be This Simple? A Biblical Model for Healing the Mind by our host here, Timothy Jennings. So stay right where you are. We'll be right back.
Too many Christians don't know the truth about dinosaurs, but Christian scientist Dr. Elaine Graham Kennedy is out to change that. Dr. Kennedy is a research scientist who has done field work at dig sites in remote places like Patagonia. She has spent her life studying dinosaurs, and now she has published a remarkable book called Dinosaurs, published by Pacific Press, that is both scientifically based and biblically sound. It answers the questions many Christians ask. Did dinosaurs really live? Are dinosaur bones fake? Who made the dinosaurs? What happened to them? And were dinosaurs on Noah's Ark? Dr. Kennedy's book, Dinosaurs, is filled with interesting facts, photographs, and colorful charts. It is a must for every Christian home and perfect for reading with your kids. To get a copy, visit www.pacificpress.com or call 1-800-765-6955.
When I was 16 years old, I was in a crash.
Hi, my name is Regina Grant. I want to introduce you to my friend Emily Jansen. A terrible car accident took away her ability to write, speak, or walk, but it did not take away the power of what she has to say. My friend Emily is a tireless volunteer. Whether she is helping children with disabilities, visiting the elderly, or feeding the homeless, she gives the gift she has to someone else. She doesn't let her personal challenges stop her from helping others. Neither should you. You have talents and abilities. Put them to work for the good of your community. That's right. Get out and live. Volunteer.
Brought to you by the Hitachi Foundation's Yoshiyama Award for Exemplary Service to the Community and this station.
Welcome back to the program. Our phone lines are open for your questions and comments. 800-775-4673. Here is a question from a caller, and I'm going to read it here. This caller has been separated from his or her significant other for 20 years. Now he or she has been self-gratifying for sexual pleasure. Is this okay? What is a single person supposed to do with all that sexual passion building up inside of them? Dr. Jennings?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the Bible does not give a specific thou shalt or thou shalt not on this particular question. So you have to read into the general principles that the Bible teaches to get some spiritual insight and guidance. And what Christ said in... And so I guess the point I'm making is it depends on the reason and this and what's going on in the mind during this time. For instance, there are people who have difficulty with fertility, and they go to a fertility clinic. And part of the evaluation of a fertility clinic is they have to do an analysis of the sperm count to see if the man has live sperm or if there's some defect in his ability to produce them. And well, how do you think they obtain that sample for them to examine? Well, it's through this process. So it depends on the circumstance. Now, the circumstance given here is very clear that this person is doing this for sexual pleasure. In that case, the issue, it seems to me, goes back to what what's going on in the mind. And what happens to the mind to when we use our imagination in this way? Christ said that you say if you commit adultery, you commit sin. I say if you lust after a woman in your heart, you've already committed adultery. So if this person is doing this for sexual pleasure, what's happening in the mind more than likely is there's some type of lust and aspects of this type of thinking going on, which is damaging to the developing character. What happens also is that this type of sexual gratification causes a person to, over the course of time, to more self-focused and maybe not as open to relationships than they could otherwise be. This is some of the principles that you would want to examine and look at, but the scripture itself is not specific on this issue. There is not a thus saith the Lord. My concern is that this has been going on for 20 years, and for 20 years this person has not evidently had any other relationship they've been involved in, and they've become very self-absorbed and self-seeking, and that would be the issue that I would be concerned with, and this behavior can accelerate that problem of self-referenced and self-absorbedness. So.
Very good. Now, the last half of that question, what is a single person supposed to do? And I'm assuming the passion that they feel looking at a member of the opposite sex and possibly wanting to marry someone and all the romance and all that. Is this okay? Well, no, I'm listening to what you just said, and the principles still apply, don't they?
Yeah, what a single person is supposed to do would be obviously to diminish some of the things that would inflame some of this behavior. So you want to avoid visual stimuli and other type of stimuli that triggers these types of desires in
which
the heart.
Which is pretty hard in this world, Dr. Zing. It's pretty hard in this world.
It is hard, but there are things you can do to diminish it. You mean, you have a choice on what you watch on television and what magazines you pick up and where you tend to look or not look. You have choices in some of these things, and to exercise those choices can diminish some of these processes.
I just want to touch on this just for a moment, because you mentioned it in a manuscript I was reading by you recently, the whole subject of pornography and using pornography for self-stimulation. You had an answer for someone who was involved with this. Can you share that answer with our listeners today?
Well, ultimately, the answer is people who pursue pornography, it's always a self-centered motivation.
Yes,
they're pursuing pornography because they want to gratify self, and the objects of their gratification are seen as objects, not as people. And one of the ways to help move past the pornographic problem is to actually come to recognize those people as people and to think about their circumstances, their health, their well-being. Think about the person you're looking at as you flip the page to the next woman or the next man you're going to look at. The next person you see is your mother or your father or your brother or your sister.
Yeah.
Suddenly, the entire appeal goes away. Why? Because you would feel offended that someone that you care about would be degrading themselves in this way. It's not appealing to see someone you care about degrade themselves. And so one of the real answer to this type of self-gratification, which is the answer to all sin in our life, is love. Perfect love casts out fear, and perfect love heals our hearts. When we come to love others more than ourselves, then we wouldn't want to exploit or take advantage of another person to gratify ourselves in this way.
I like that, because that works for the single person walking across a college campus or see a coworker down the hall or whatnot, to recognize that these are people, that these are individuals, and there's a lot more to them than what they're wearing or how you're attracted to them. Okay, here we go. Real quick, caller has, was it psoriasis? Is that what it says?
That looks like that to me, yeah.
Psoriasis for over 15 years. Could it be God's will that he or she has had this for so long? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I think this goes back to that whole question, and I think it's a distortion that has come over the mindset of much of Christianity, that God creates us the way we are, and if we have problems, it's God's will. I heard this in the last presidential race when Sarah Palin had a child with Down syndrome, and she talked about how God blessed her with this child and indicated it was God's will that she should have this child. I think that shows a lack of understanding of what God's will is, because God's will is not that that we should ever suffer with illness or disease or defect. It is His will to heal and restore us back to perfection. And one day that will happen for all of us. Why yes. somebody has this particular affliction or any affliction in this world right now is because in this world right now, we are in a world in which God's principles are not the rule of life on planet Earth. Both sociologic life, psychologic life, and physiologic life are not operating in harmony with God's original design, and so we see defects all over the place. So, and sadly, because God has permitted the freedom of Adam and Eve to deviate from His design, people then turn back on God and say, it's His will that all this pain and suffering happen. Oh no, it was never His will. What it is His will, that we have freedom. It's His will that love exists in the universe, and love can only exist in an atmosphere of freedom. But it was not His will that we should use our freedoms to abuse ourselves and others as Adam and Eve did, resulting in these sicknesses and diseases that we suffer with on this earth. Some sickness and disease we have today is due to our own decision-making. Some sickness and disease have nothing to do with the choices we personally made, but choices others have made before us or around us.
Yes, yes. That's an important lesson to learn. Okay, I think we have time for this one more question. This is from a caller. A caller is on bioidentical hormones and was in a toxic marriage for 12 years and is currently in a happy marriage, but she has lost her libido. What can she do to psychologically retrieve it back? If the brain's number one organ, how can she get that brain organ to work?
Yeah, that's a great question. And first, what I would say is I would definitely have an evaluation of any physiological processes that could be contributing to this. It doesn't have to be just hormonal. It sounds like she's had the hormonal issues addressed. But if there are other issues going on, other physical illness of some kind, physical illness will deplete one's sexual drive. So a good physical examination. She should have her thyroid examined. Hypothyroidism will drop out your libido. She should evaluate if there are any symptoms of depression. One of the major symptoms of depression is loss of sexual drive or sexual interest. That should be evaluated. The assumption in the question is it's all psychological. Well, I don't have any clue as what the psychological dynamics are of the circumstance and the marriage she is in, so I couldn't give any specifics to that. So I would recommend that she see, if she believes there's psychological issues going on that have affected her libido, to see a qualified psychologist or psychiatrist in her local area that she can to explore those aspects with and get some guidance on that. But it's such a wide range of possibilities, I couldn't give any specific answer.
Sure, sure. Well, we're coming near the end of our program, and I just want to give you, Dr. Jennings, the final word here. There are a lot of people who are suffering right now mentally about this subject of sex. There are a lot of people listening to us right now who have great questions. Tell us once again in a nutshell the abiding principles, the overarching principles that we need to remember when we address any question, including the ones about sex.
The overabiding principles are loving the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself, meaning that you put God first, following His original plan, and you're willing to give of yourself to help and bless those around you. And then in the context of a loving relationship, you keep yourself pure and whole. You keep yourself pure, waiting for the person that God has brought into your life that you can share yourself with in an intelligent way. And in the context of that loving relationship, then you're willing to seek the happiness and joy of the partner you're with, rather than exploit the partner you're with for your own gratification.
That is beautiful stuff. Well, we hear music in the background. That means we're coming up to the end of the program. I'm going to have the call screener decide who gets the book. And since we didn't have any names attached to the names that we had on our questions, I'll just let the call screener decide, and she has the information, and we'll put the name and send it to. So if you receive a book, you're the winner. Caller, if you were one of those that called in today's shows and asked a question, if a book shows up, you're our winner. Congratulations to you. And for the rest of us, we can head over to comeandreason.com and get information about that book and about the DVD set that Dr. Jennings has, and also has wonderful blogs about all kinds of subjects we talk about on this show, as well as opportunities to listen to past shows right there on the internet. That's www.comeandreason.com. www.comeandreason.com. Well, like I say, our time is up. Always a joy to have you listening in. Dr. Jennings, thank you so much for being here. And until next week, this is Charles Mills along with Dr. Timothy Jennings, inviting you to apply the simple solutions God placed in your heart today. Goodbye, everyone.
Simple Solutions is a production of Life Talk Radio and Dr. Timothy Jennings and is made possible by your generous support. For more information, visit www.comeandreason.com.